Hello, hello. Welcome everybody to episode 103 of the No Normal Show for Thursday, May 13th, 2021, brought to you by Revive Health. This is our weekly deep dive into how hospital and health system marketers can navigate what we're still calling the No Normal. I'm Chris Bevelo, Health Systems Practice Lead at Revive Health and your host for the show. I'm joined by Chase Kleckner, Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and our show's producer. Hello, Chase.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you as always.
Yeah, good to be back. You know, we had a special event a couple of weeks ago with our Joe Public All Access event, which was fantastic. And then life intervened. It has done more than I would have expected over the last year. And so we didn't have a live show last week. We reran the All Access, which was great. But so glad to be back live with everybody. And perfect that we're back live with our guest, Chris Pace. Chris is an experienced marketer with 20 years devoted to the healthcare industry. He's currently the chief digital marketing executive at Banner Health, the largest hospital system and employer in the state of Arizona. His responsibilities include driving the content strategy, service line marketing strategy, and website development strategy there. Since joining Banner Health in 2018, Chris's leadership has pushed Banner to expand its digital footprint through a comprehensive digital marketing stack. Chris, hey.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. We got a lot to cover. So looking forward to diving in with you.
All right, I'm excited. Let's go.
Yes, yeah. So unfortunately, a couple of housekeeping notes, as always, that stand between us and a dynamic conversation, but we'll get through them quick. If you're new to this podcast, this is where we share industry trends, research stories. We talk to people from inside healthcare, from outside healthcare. Basically, we're trying to bring ideas and content or whatever will help health system marketers and communicators navigate that no normal I mentioned successfully. If you want to know more what we mean by no normal, some of the principles of no normal, check out a blog post that we wrote last year, still valid. No normal is still valid, even though looks like things are going well with COVID. As you will read, the no normal actually will last even past when COVID is no longer maybe the headline, because there's so much change that we're having to deal with. We'll talk to a little bit about that, but you can find that in the chat function. So Chase has just posted the link to that blog post in the chat function. He will be posting other things there potentially as we go through today's show. If you're live with us, you can look there. Okay, Chris Pace, when we got together to talk about this show and where we wanted to go with it, you brought up the idea of, and we've talked about this on the show repeatedly, but we love the way you kind of couch this, the kind of parallel paths that health system marketers are on in terms of everything COVID, which is still, you know, maybe a number one out there, along with all the other things that healthcare marketers have to do, which for a while in 2020 took a complete backseat. So brand building, service line marketing, digital, all of that, particularly last spring, about this time last year, these things were maybe even off our calendars. But as we've moved through this, and today we still have these two parallel paths. The way you described it was they're not only parallel paths, you know, let's use another analogy. I don't know if parallel path is an analogy. I guess it is. Is it an analogy or a metaphor?
It seems to work.
Yeah, I mean, they're not paths. I think the way you talked about it was, let's talk about them in terms of two different kinds of boats, where growth and driving volume is a speedboat and COVID-19 is a canoe where we're just plodding along and we've got to do both of those things at the same time. So not only parallel, but different speeds and all that entails. So that's kind of the theme for today. We're going to hit it in a number of different ways. First, let's talk about digital, which of course is your purview and the front door and how the work that you've done in terms of digital really is helping you both from a speedboat and a canoe perspective. So let's talk there.
Yeah. So, you know, pre-COVID, everything was sort of, you know, you're balancing in two canoes, right? You've got your normal day-to-day work, and then you've got those random things that pop at you, but generally they're kind of at the same cadence, right? You know, you're just kind of balancing. Then COVID comes along, speedboat, you know, the canoe revs up and gets a 500 horsepower engine. And all of a sudden you're flying and you're still trying to balance like what you were still focused on. Maybe that was not a focus at all. Well, then, you know, we shifted back to, you know, sort of COVID in the, still in the foreground or, you know, maybe a little bit in the rearview mirror, depending on where you are, but it's still there. And then meanwhile, you know, you've had a lot of doctors and hospital operators that have been sitting there with idle hands for a long time. And they're like, all right, it's time to get people back in here. Q1 looked miserable. We need to move forward and start getting people back in. And the challenge we have is that, you know, you still have hesitancy out there. You have, you know, all these other factors that we'll go into later. But really the lesson that I think COVID taught me and COVID taught Banner Health as an organization was that we invested in the technology to prepare us for when those boats change speeds. And what I mean by that is, you know, we built our digital front door over the course of the last 3 or 4 years to really prepare us to reduce friction for consumers to access our services. And when COVID became the messaging and the service line, if you will, those platforms proved value because we were able to get near time information out to consumers and push them through our different channels of engagement, but then also pull from, you know, Google search or whatever the traditional ways that consumers would access health information. Because of all these investments we made, we showed up. And so, you know, our website had significant lift. You know, we had all sorts of huge numbers to show that, hey, this investment that we just launched, while it didn't produce, you know, ortho volume because we couldn't, you know, it did provide value to millions of consumers that were looking to us as the wise guide to lead them through this effort and this national, global challenge together with the same messaging across all our channels.
Yeah, it's first of all, shout out to Alan Shoebridge in the chat to
it's a good one.
Who says it feels like we're in a speedboat towing a canoe. I think that's nice, appropriate. Chris, it reflects back for me to, well, it was probably about mid-year, we had Paul Madsen from Cleveland Clinic on, and he said, he didn't say the exact same thing, but he had this, you know, a similar take of, thank goodness we did what we did in terms of digital, because we were just so much more prepared than your average bear for what came in 2020. And then obviously a lot of people have made huge advancements during or because of COVID, but they had to kind of make those on the fly, which, you know, is really stressful and not always the best way. So yeah, talk a little bit about how far ahead you think you are. I think you have done some things, Chris, that do put you in a kind of a, I don't know, lead boat position. I'm gonna stick with that metaphor.
Yeah. I think, you know, we're obviously when you're chasing sort of the holy grail of digital consumerism and, you know, that would be like the golden customer record, being able to track every interaction across every touch point that you own, brick and mortar or digital, and know the lifetime value of the consumer. I mean, honestly, at this point, I don't know that anybody's going to ever get there to perfection. I think directionally, we're, as an organization, we are gaining momentum toward that. And I think that, you know, given these investments that we made, I mean, and this was really important because the board sort of challenged Banner Health to say, hey, you know, the life is moving around us. We need to differentiate. You know, it's not just enough to have short wait times or, you know, access to care. It's, you know, you have to be positioned like airlines, like financial services, like retail in terms of how you address consumers. And, you know, we, as an organization, changed our mission statement ahead of all of this investment. So it was before I started at Banner, but it was around like 2017 or so. We shifted from a very traditional, you know, healthcare hospital sounding mission statement around, like, I don't even know what it was. It was so mundane, see a sameness. We pivoted to making healthcare easier so life can be better. So that's our true north. That's what we chase. And then from there, we can start building consumer facing campaigns. We can build our technology, our digital products around making healthcare easy. And that's a bold statement. And again, it's one of those things that's, you know, maybe not fully attainable, but it's something that is good to aim for. And so how do we do that? We look, and how do we know what that means? Because we think things differently than what consumers think. So consumers, we asked, we did focus groups. We, you know, we polled people online and we asked, what are the biggest pain points across these different sections of a consumer journey in healthcare? And it was things like, I can't find the doctor I need. I can't book online. I can't easily pay my bill. I can't see my medical record across all my different care settings. I have too many passwords to keep up with. And, you know, we started chipping away at, okay, of those things that they kept mentioning, there were these common themes that could be addressed with digital. So we built the digital front door aligning to those different things. So, you know, in my world, I'm focused on the acquisition side of the funnel and, you know, making sure that our website shows up on Google, making sure that we reduce the number of clicks to get to the call to action. You know, healthcare websites are historically bad. They're digital brochures of a bunch of chest pounding, you know, hey, we've got the best Da Vinci robot that everybody else has. We have, you know, these rock star physicians that do TAVR, which, you know, there's also more of those out there too. So we can't, like, we can't differentiate that way. So let's differentiate based on creating a super easy experience that has easy to find access of doctors, easy to access information on the health issues you might have. But then also, like, let's march up the funnel a bit and engage. And I mean, we literally like took Cleveland Clinic's playbook and Northwell and the others and said, you know, they write to a very sort of engaged consumer that is not necessarily a purchaser, you know, and that's okay. They're doing content marketing that doesn't have a sales pitch. That's okay too. Because again, all we're trying to do is say, hey, you know, we're here when you need us, and we'll be here to provide you valuable information. But meanwhile, you know, as we kind of watch those interactions happen, we can, you know, say, hey, did you raise your hand for this one thing? And then we can start delivering some of that push content to those that did show interest, did show engagement, and are in an area that we can influence them. So that's kind of, you know, that was the secret sauce to make all this work. But it also worked for COVID because, you know, again, we had gained all that trust and we just took that trust equity and shifted it.
So let's, I want to dive deep, continue with the ocean metaphor on one of the things that you said. And this really doesn't have anything to do with COVID necessarily, but that's fine because we want to think about going forward, you know, sans COVID as much as possible on this show. And the idea of, you know, reaching people with content in a way that engages them, even when they don't need you. You talked earlier about, you know, the holy grail of understanding all of the touch points digitally or otherwise, so that you can really meet people wherever they're at. And I think, you know, and you said, you know, will people ever get there? I want to get your opinion on a dynamic of that, that to us is just, it is the nut to crack. And that is, if you think of Amazon, how powerful Amazon's personalization engine is, right? We all know this. We all know that when you're shopping for something, they will recommend something based on what other people have done, but also based on you. And what's interesting to me is health systems are trying to do this in a way that it's based on what they can find outside of maybe the most valuable information they have, which is PHI, right? If you've engaged with somebody, you have content and data about them that is as rich potentially as possible. If they're a primary care patient, you're going to know more about them health-wise than anything else you can find, right? Well, theoretically. But boy, are we hesitant for good reasons to leverage that. In fact, a lot of health systems, when they're out there trying to market, will exclude patients or intentionally keep them out of their marketing because they don't want to stumble over HIPAA. They don't want to stumble over opt-in or opt-out. And so we're almost like intentionally hamstringing ourselves from using the most valuable thing we could use. What's your take on that? What's your take on will we ever get to a place where we're not just using, oh, they signed up for a newsletter and some third-party data, but also all the wealth of information we know about them through our PHI? Is that a thing? Is that ever going to be a thing, Chris?
It is a thing, and it's a thing we're working on trying to figure out. So you have this treasure trove of information. Banner is a Cerner shop, so we're one of the biggest implementations of one instance of Cerner in the US. And that means we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 million customer records, right? But they're patient records. They're not customer records. And there's a clear distinction there. And so what we had to do was build Salesforce, or a CRM application. It doesn't have to be Salesforce. We just picked it because it made the most sense. But the story goes that Cerner said, "Hey, we're a CRM. You don't need a CRM." And we're like, "Well, you're a PRM, if you will. But what we need is to be able to append every interaction that we have, call, click, or walk in, plus valuable insights that keep us away from sort of a HIPAA instance, but enough information so that we can provide value." So when we built our CRM application in Salesforce, we were the first to crack the API code to get Cerner into Salesforce so that we could start flowing data in. And this was primarily done to make our call center agents more empowered with information. So not only could they understand who they were talking to and know those prior engagements from a health setting standpoint, but they could book directly inside of one window, not have to hop around to like 8 different windows like they had previously. That created efficiency. So improved our satisfaction scores on the call side. Fantastic. Saves money. It's a great customer experience. But then take it a step further. Okay, so now with push marketing through our email channel, how do we take this a step closer to personalization without, again, Chris, you nailed it. The preference center is sort of like, a step in the maturity curve on, that fear of losing the customer forever. So we're trying to build that in right now. But, so we're a little bit gun shy on what do we do as far as pushing out too much information. So we've kind of found the secret sauce and one of the balance things that we've done that's really driven value is, all right, so we know Chris Pace is a, male in Gilbert, Arizona, and I had a primary care appointment, 18 months ago before COVID. So when we started looking at return to care, rather than just doing a blast to everybody, say, "Hey, go to your primary care doctor," whoever that may be, we personalize the email. So Chris Pace gets an email that says, "Dr. Sai wants to invite you back. Here's all the safety things we've done. We know it's been, and then you inject like how long it's been since you've been in. And then it's signed by Dr. Sai. And so it becomes more of like a personalized touch and like, hey, you know me. So we, normally click-through rates are what, like our open rates on emails are 15, 20% on average. These are getting like 50% open rates. And, we're getting direct bookings through our Find a Doctor application to deliver consumers back to care. And now they have options. They have virtual or in person. So it's created this amazing sort of lead capture nurture loop that, everybody outside of healthcare has always had and, healthcare has never had. And, we feel like we're a little bit closer to sort of true consumerism with personalization and understanding your customer. So now we can take those learnings and apply them to, mammography or, other care settings, diabetes care for chronic condition management and the like. So it's been pretty powerful stuff. And I think that just knowing the customer, even if you don't know everything, if you know something, that's more powerful than not knowing anything.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to get there. It's super interesting to try to figure out this conundrum and, the idea of marketing diabetes care as an example, but excluding the people that are most likely to benefit from that because they're patients, because you're worried about some of this stuff, just seems so wrong and backwards. So the quicker we can figure that, you know, or having two, like you have to have two campaigns. You have to have the patient campaign. You have to have this campaign instead of something that's just nuanced, no matter who you are, based on how we know you, you know, we'll get there. It's just a huge challenge. Talk a little bit about your feedback loop. That's something you mentioned to us before. In terms of service line growth. So we're talking about diabetes or whatever. I'm interested to hear more about that.
Sure. Yeah. So something that kind of spun up from COVID that we're actually applying to growth now is we have a weekly meeting that we call cross-channel communications. And basically, you know, we have a customer research team that does constant polling of our audience to whatever it was, you know, how are we doing on safety measures back in the summer and fall? You know, how are we showing up with our advertising? So it's a little bit of like a brand tracker, mini light kind of deal in between the 6 month waves. And then, you know, every once in a while we'll ask like, you know, return to care hesitancy or vaccine hesitancy or whatever it is, we can just plumb these into the weekly surveys that we do. And then those are reported out in this meeting. And then we have report outs from, you know, Earn Media. What are they pitching? You know, what are the news organizations asking for? What are we seeing from the web perspective? What are we pushing out? You know, what are we seeing on an inbound like SEO, or, you know, what sections of the site are trending more? You know, there was a period of time where half our traffic was going to COVID stuff. Mm-hmm. And now it's like 5%. So, you know, but now we're seeing a shift on location finding and services and so forth. So, you know, we share all that information. And then, you know, like the email team, you know, they have some areas where, you know, when they do the blast to like the 1 million, the big group, you know, they can plumb in certain content based on what's trending. And then they have some planned stuff that is calendared out based on whatever is happening in the month. So we kind of take all that information, then those data is shared out. We see what worked, what didn't work, take it back. They might surface up new questions we want to ask from the research side. And then it kind of continues on and on and on. So, you know, for COVID, it was super successful because, you know, we can kind of tailor the messaging to align with where people were in testing or vaccines. Now it's okay. You know, we know that like cardiac patients are a little bit more likely to come back now, but oncology is still sitting on the sideline. And, you know, so what are the leading indicators that show that people are coming back to care? Can we start talking about imaging? Can we start talking about primary care and so on and so on? And then, so that loop just continues to feed the growth mindset of where we go from a performance marketing standpoint.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And how do you see that enhancing or advancing or expanding in some way moving forward? Like if you could wave a magic wand, how would you want to, you know, supercharge that effort, the idea of the feedback loop?
I mean, I think having it in a way that's a little bit more automated. So it's not necessarily we have to wait till Friday at 11 to talk about it. We can, you know, start surfacing these things up in some kind of dashboard so that folks can jump in and activate. I think the slippery slope with it, though, is if you are too focused on episodic or like trending now type stuff, you lose the forest for the trees. So we shifted from ocean to land now. So, when you're some of these campaigns that you do, like sports medicine, I mean, isn't going to change like day to day. Generally, it's kind of, you know, you have a path that you need to go and it might shift a bit, but you still have your North Star that you're chasing. So you can't be too reactionary, I think, is the key point, that, you know, use the feedback loop as a value to optimize versus a way to sort of drive your strategy. I think there's a nice balance of both that can really complement one another.
Yeah, okay, that's great. We've got a couple of questions. I'm gonna hold on them, Chris, to the end. But another topic we talked about was consumerism and advancing consumerism. So give us your perspective on that.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I mean, some of the stories are a little bit old, but I think, you know, the trends still play out. And I think what COVID did is accelerate self-service. in healthcare specifically. I mean, we all were trained to order food on Postmates and order groceries on Instacart and, you know, pretty much just stay away from everybody. And I think what we found is, hey, you know, I actually just had a dermatology appointment this morning and I reflected on it immediately because I decided I wanted to wait in my car instead of the waiting room, even though I've been vaccinated, I had a mask on, everybody had masks on. I still, you know, I think, you know, personal space has been sort of underappreciated. And now we're kind of like, oh, this is kind of nice, you know, not having people, you know, around you all the time. So in consumerism for healthcare, I think what we are going to see and what we are as an organization are building toward is really allowing consumers to define what their customer experience looks like pre-patient, because the patient experience is really just that time you have with the doctor. Everything mm-hmm. else is the customer experience. So, you know, when you show up to an appointment, do you need a waiting room anymore? Or can you just leverage technology to say, hey, you're just like DoorDash, or not DoorDash, OpenTable says, hey, your table's ready. You have 5 minutes to claim it. You know, why couldn't we do the same thing in a healthcare environment where you show up for your primary care appointment and your slot is ready, your room's ready, and you just go right in. Mm-hmm. You know, other things like digital engagement with your doctor, you know, not necessarily, I mean, doctors need to, they're paid based on productivity. So you can't necessarily get reimbursed for handling a chat room, but, you know, having some way to have a dialogue that may be AI front loaded and then a person on the other side so that you can get the questions you need answered in a quicker fashion so that you're not showing up and having a less than desirable experience when you get in the brick and mortar setting. And then of course, telehealth. I mean, you know, telehealth was sort of that thing that everybody aspired to. And then all of a sudden, like we had to have it, like it was just not optional. So, you know, Banner was in the same boat. We had nothing a year and a half ago. And then in April of 2020, we launched 5,000 doctors on telehealth out of nowhere. You know, I mean, I know there was a nowhere, there was a where in the nowhere, but you know, it felt like it was just, here it is. And, you know, I think integrated experiences are something that healthcare isn't great at. We're good at Legos. You know, I got a Lego set here. I got a Lego set here. I'm just going to bolt on some white labeled thing that doesn't speak to anything else. And, you know, one thing that we are really focused on, what Digital Front Door taught us, is the power of the plumbing. So you can build a house that has a great facade, but if you don't have the interfaces connected and the data flowing properly, it's going to collapse and it's going to be way more expensive and create a poor customer experience and drive your NPS scores and everything else down. So consumerism partly is the interaction of the consumer, but it's also making sure that your infrastructure can support consumerism. And if you don't build that part first, then you know, the other side is doomed to fail, I think.
Yeah. Your example reminds me of something we did years ago. We worked with a hospital in northern Minnesota that was required to use an MRI, a mobile MRI van. And they had to park it in a way that people came into imaging to check in, and they had to do this tour of the hospital through the ambulance bay outside. Now, this is northern Minnesota. So in the winter, you're making people walk 20, 30 feet when it could be 0 degrees or worse, right? And our idea was like, you need to have curbside service. You need to have people, yeah. They can pull right up to there's parking. They can pull right up to the MRI. They call, because back then there just wasn't digital capability to do this. And you bring them the paper, you know, the clipboard that they have to do back in the imaging. You're ready for them. You bring it to their car. They do it in their car where they're nice and warm. And when they're ready, they walk the 5 feet right into the MRI van instead of the whole thing. So it feels like that's where we need to go. And we're just, it's still a struggle, Chris, you know, the trying to realign industry that was built from the inside looking out. It was built for us. So it was built for the providers. It's just a huge challenge. Also, I'm going to ask Chase to please keep track of the metaphors we were using. We are now, we have now used the house metaphor, and also we've created a monster in the chat. where yes, we have comments like it's best if you're rowing in the same direction. Sounds like you're ahead of the fleet.
I feel like this has shifted to a dad joke challenge almost.
It is. But that's great. That's great. All right. So let's get to a couple of questions. Again, beautiful use of the metaphor. What is your main challenge right now to make sure that you keep the boat floating smoothly?
Well, I think right now the challenge is keeping the team on the same path. You know, we haven't physically been around each other in over a year now, and I don't see that changing. So, you know, it's kind of changed what I have to do as a leader to keep people motivated and not, it's so easy to silo when your day is, you know, a bunch of Zoom meetings and you're kind of sticking to your vertical. You're not hearing any side chats that are happening. So trying to, you know, use my position of what I know and be able to relay that to the team in a way that, you know, doesn't feel like it's just loading work on them, but it's more like connecting dots. So I want to know why I'm doing this, not just that I'm doing it on the schedule. That's shows up more and more, I think, more so than it did pre Zoom fatigue. So that's really one thing that I see as an ongoing challenge. And then another challenge is obviously the patience of hospital operators that generally fall into a very prescribed calendar of events that need to happen. And, you know, sort of a easy to forget the past mindset. It's like, you know, we've got these benchmarks to hit this month, so we need to do it this month, and marketing's always the fix, right? So that's just trying to create a narrative to say, you know, let's solve problems together. Let's find goals that we can achieve, and then let's stick to that plan and not get shiny object syndrome with things that pop up.
Let me ask you about the first part of what you said as a leader in your organization, leading a team. And you said, you know, I'm not sure it'll ever go back to the way it was. It's such an interesting conversation right now out there about work from home, remote work versus in office. And on one hand, you completely understand the desire of many people to get back to a place where they're interacting with people live because everybody's sick of Zoom. But also, like, you know, most of the stuff I've seen, the research, the surveys say, yeah, but not full time. Like, whoa. Like, I'm not talking about like back in the office from 9 to 5 all the time. And coming off a year where so many organizations and many health system marketing departments that we've talked to would convey this, did their best work and were the most productive in the face of a crisis than they ever have been before, all remote. So to kind of think that, well, you know, we're just going to ignore that, we're going to go back to the way it was, I agree. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. But how do you balance these different tensions? The idea of what we need to be together, but whoa, not all the time. I don't want my commute anymore and all of that. I mean, what's just your personal take on that?
Well, yeah, that's the big question. So I'm an extrovert, and, you know, it kind of kills me not to be around people. And, you know, we're talking before the show about conferences and bringing those back, mm-hmm. and what does that feel like and look like. But, you know, as far as like the day-to-day ops, I guess my opinion is that I'm going to be a lot more mindful about when it makes sense, when we're allowed to, when it makes sense to bring everybody together in the same room. And I think that there's certain things, you know, especially when you have a creative group, that, you know, creatives need to be creative among other creatives. And we lose that with Zoom to a big degree. When you have very strong, like, you know, top of skill set practitioners of their work, this kind of environment actually works really well. So how do we, you know, make sure that when we're getting together, it's mindfully thought out as far as why, that the expectations are clear, the attendees are clear, and you know, everybody has a specific assignment. So it's kind of like going back to old school meeting planning versus what was happening, you know, a year and a half ago, which was, you know, I mean, I can't tell you how many meetings I'd be in. I had no idea why I was there. I had no pre-read. I had no action items at the end. And it's just like, I just felt like I was just navigating the elevator and trying to figure out which meeting room I was going to next. now at least I have an idea because it's all like in front of me and it's very efficient. But, you know, some hybrid of that I think is going to be important, but I think it's going to bring back more intentional meeting structuring versus just inviting everybody there. And if, you know, someone gets value out of it, great. I use this Elon Musk quote, you know, where, you know, if you don't get value or you don't find, if you don't get value or bring value to a meeting, then remove it from your calendar. And this is, again, pre-COVID. So I started working on that ahead of the pandemic. And, you know, then we had to be together all the time because, you know, I didn't want people to feel alone. But now we're trying to like detangle from that and be more prescribed about why and who and when and where. And I think that that'll just translate over into the in-person environment, but it'll be as appropriate, not as mandatory.
Yeah, it's going to be, it'll be tricky because it, I think like the benefit of either the old way of 9 to 5 in the office or the work from home is they're very simple. They're very simple. Either one's a very simple solution. It's very like you're in the office 9 to 5, whether it's effective or not, or all the challenges you mentioned, or you're working from home. Like at least it's clear and simple. The right way forward is not clear and simple. It's going to be a mix. It's going to be complicated. It's going to require some energy from planners and from employees, but that's like everything else, right? Like if it's worth doing, it's probably not easy to do.
Exactly.
So that'll be the challenge. All right. Another question for you. And we get this a lot, Chris. So you feel, you know, comfortable to share whatever you feel comfortable to share. And that is, you know, talk about the size of your team. How many people do you have, you know, in your department? Yeah. Maybe marketing overall, if you're comfortable talking to that, or marketing communications, or if you're not, just talking generalities.
Yeah, sure. So my team, digital marketing, is 10 people. I have 4 direct reports for website, acute performance marketing, ambulatory performance marketing, and then social and content, blog content. And then under them, there's some support folks that that roll up. And, you know, when I look at other organizations like, say, Cleveland Clinic, who has, you know, 100 writers or whatever, I'm just blown away at that because I can't imagine having to herd that many cats. And then also, you know, we sort of prescribe to let's get the strategy in-house, and then, you know, we can outsource as much of the commodity level stuff as possible. So like with writing, you know, we write 400 blog articles a year, but we have an agency that helps us with that. With, you know, our website, I have 3 people that have keys to Sitecore on my team. And we drive the entire strategy for a website that gets almost 40 million visits a year. So how do we do that? Well, we have IT partners that help us on the sort of fulfillment of the application. And then we work with agencies to help write, you know, SEO content or what have you. And then, you know, we have, well, the same agency helps us with the, sort of the technical elements of SEO, but, you know, we don't necessarily need to hire that skill set in-house. We just really need the people that can connect banners, business goals to an execution on website. And then performance marketing, again, it's building an omni-channel plan or playbook. We kind of redeveloped what a marketing plan looks like internally. And then we work with our advertising team. So there's, you know, my group's 10, advertising's just like, you know, 5 or 6. We got some video folks and then some advertising, you know, director and specialists that work with agency to place. We have PR team that's like, you know, 4 or 5 folks. And then our contact center's, you know, in the hundreds. But, you know, I mean, in aggregate, we're, aside from call center, we've got maybe like 40, 50 people, something like that. You know, for an $11 billion, yeah, 30 hospital system, it's pretty lean.
Yeah, that seems pretty lean, actually, for that size of organization. Appreciate you sharing all that. So 2 last points. One, Alan was kind enough in the chat, if you're with us live, to share an article about hybrid work models that he recommends. So
great,
check that out. And then one last question. And I think this goes to something that has plagued health system marketers since as long as I've been in this field, which is 20 years. And that is, you know, fielding all of the requests that come in.
Yes.
And maybe one of the silver linings of COVID was when your service line shut down, you no longer have ear, nose, and throat beating down your door saying we need a billboard. Now that things are ramping back up, you would expect to whatever degree you were doing that before to be coming back or have been coming back, maybe even at an accelerated level. So talk just really briefly, Chris, about what you're seeing there and how you guys go about managing the influx or flood, or we're back to the water metaphor, tsunami of requests that can come in for someone in an organization your size.
Yeah, so I would say that the best tip I can give, because Banner's structure is probably unique in that everything's centralized, service line and all that stuff. But if I were in a hospital setting or like, you know, in a couple hospital setting and I'm dealing with, you know, robotics wanting something and, you know, gastro and so on and so on, I would say that the discussions are best served at a strategic level. So make sure you bring it up a notch. What problem are we trying to solve? What does success look like? How do we differentiate? Like keep those things at that level, because inside of hospital operations, people are tactic chasers and you can't get into that game. You won't win. And then I think the other thing is be clear on where those negotiations can be, because again, a billboard doesn't solve, you know, booking appointments in a, like for, I don't know, a hip replacement. You know, you have to understand, I mean, that's what your job is as a marketer, is to connect strategy to consumer and figuring out that pathway. And if you can get to those levels of discourse where you're having that discussion at the top line, you'll be a lot less frustrated. And then just be clear on how you're measuring success, because your view of success is going to be based on a certain number of KPIs, but you can't see all the way downstream to the actual folks that showed up. So, you know, you need to ask them questions as much as they're going to ask you questions.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Thank you for that. And I would just add, because it's probably, we're reverting back to operating procedure. I guess we're in the speedboat or the canoe or one of those. More so as COVID kind of fades, now is the time, if you were struggling before, to really put all those guidelines in place before you get swamped as you might've been before. So I'm going to leave it with that. Chris, thank you so much. This is fantastic.
Thank you. It was a pleasure and great to chat with you again.
Yeah. Thanks for joining. Chase, as always, sir.
Yeah, appreciate of course. It. Enjoyed the conversation.
Please let us know if there's something you'd like us to cover. You can post something in the chat now if you're still with us live. You can email us at nonormal@thinkrevivehealth.com. Also, remember to visit our website for all of our COVID stuff or recording of today's episode. If you go to thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19, you can actually get to both of those. Also, subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And until next week, good luck out there in the no normal. Thanks for joining, everybody.